Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another Wednesday evening. It is time for another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and this is episode number 161. With me, as usual, is Mr. Stephen Jeeves, and he is not in the hospital this week. How are you doing, Stephen?
I am doing just nifty keen, and I want to give another shout-out again to the people at Grandview Medical Center. Last Wednesday, I had heart surgery, and it got pushed back to the afternoon. So I actually came out of surgery 2.5 hours before the podcast, and I had it set up in my room, and we did a podcast with Beam in Michigan and me in the hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, with the assistance of Nurse Amber. Thank you again, Nurse Amber. And by the way, those of you who have not subscribed to our newsletter, Nurse Amber subscribed to it. What are you waiting for? So again, thanks to everybody at Grandview Medical Center. Everything went great. I'm feeling good. Everything's good your end, except for, you know, wind.
Yeah, we had last Thursday evening, we had some bad weather that came through here. And I guess it was like 7 tornadoes that hit in the area. And we had some serious straight line wind. Now, back in the 80s, I lived in Fort Myers, and I was down there for Tropical Storm Keith. And that was pretty wicked. The winds that we had here back last week were a lot worse than that. And it mangled trees. It snapped these grand old trees in half. We got tree damage everywhere. It looks like somebody threw bombs here and there. And we lost our electricity for 3 days, lost the internet for 4 days, and then it came back on for half a day and went out again and came back on, and it's been on since. But it was a pretty terrible, horrible time, but not as bad as our good buddy Vern Wang. So he's down there in Florida, and I'm going to bring him up now. We're going to mention him later, but he's going through an actual hurricane right now.
Actual.
They took a direct hit. This wasn't a tropical storm or, you know, straight line winds. This is an actual hurricane. So keep him in your thoughts, and hopefully he's listening to us, because he said he had his phone, so he would try to listen tonight. If you are, stay safe, Verwayne and Lisa. We are thinking about you.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we've got a new book out, people. It's by David Carroll. He's the NBC News anchor there in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he's also got his own radio show, his own newspaper column, and a bunch of books out there that are proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. This one's called I Won't Be Your Scapegoat, and this one's a hilarious look at where people have posted on social media different postings but misspelled things or used the wrong word or unintentionally made something very, very funny. So he collects all of those, and he puts together a whole book of them here, and each of them he makes his own comment afterwards, too. So his comments sometimes are as funny or funnier than the original joke, too. So
narky.
Every time Beam and I worked on this book, we'd get to where we weren't working. We were just reading and laughing, you know. So
laughing.
It's definitely a fun book. It's called I Won't Be Your Scapegoat. And, of course, it's out there in hardcover, dust jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all the digital formats all over the world. So I Won't Be Your Scapegoat by David Carroll. It's for sale now. Get your copy.
Yeah, and also coming next week, due next week, Mermaid Cove by Maureen Howard. Maureen has she writes novels. The Dying is one of her novels that's soon to be arriving. But this book is she's also an artist, and she painted and sketched various mermaids, and she put them all together in a book. And we have published that, and that will be coming next week. Mermaid Cove by Maureen Howard. So keep your ears open and your eyes open, and grab a copy. So now normally we go over to Twitter, and Verwayne Greenhall is usually sitting there saying, hey, I'm here, we're listening, you know, but he's not able to. But you can. If you're not in the hurricane area, you can call in or you can put a comment or a question out on Twitter. And here's how you can do all that stuff.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Be there.
All right. We've got another book that we published this week. In fact, we're in the middle of publishing it. it'll be published right after this. We'll finish publishing it right after this show is over. This one is called Celebrate 98, and it's about the 1998 championship season of the Tennessee Volunteers. Yes, people, we're talking about college football, which those of you who are into college football know it starts this weekend. It's another kickoff time for the season. And we were really hustling to get this book out. This is full of all kinds of full-color pictures from the University of Tennessee, from ESPN, from several newspaper people, from Stephen Hargis, whose book we published called Eight Hateful Miles, and other people as well. And we also have got a foreword by Paul Feinbaum, who's ESPN Radio, ESPN Sports, and he also runs the SEC Network for ESPN, which covers Tennessee football. So we really hustled to get this thing together over the last 3 or 4 weeks so we could have it out in time for football season. And it's looking like that thing will be by this weekend easily for all the print editions. The digital editions are already out there as of yesterday. So Celebrate 98 by Dave Hooker of Off the Hook Sports.
All right. Also out now, which means you can go over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever you get your books, and you can order your copy of Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marvel Tournament by Janice Toney. This is a chapter book with wonderful illustrations. This is for kids, preteen, early teens, and this is a storybook about bullying and why bullying is wrong, and it sends a really good strong message, and Janice Toney put this together and really did a good job with it. So Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marvel Tournament, out now. Go grab your copy. And if you want to know about other books that we've got coming out, we do, as Stephen mentioned, his nurse is subscribed to our newsletter. Why aren't you? If you're not, here's how you can subscribe to the Fresh Ink Group newsletter.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
All right. So we jumping into the top 25 here?
Yeah, we can jump into that.
All right. These are the top 25 print bestsellers published by Fresh Ink Group over the past week or so. And I'm looking at up here at the top, we've got one at number one that I wasn't expecting to see up there. Hadn't been up there for a little while, so that's kind of cool. Let's bang them out here. Starting at the bottom of the list, How to Paint an American by Andrew McGregor. That's the paperback edition. And then above that, we've got Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase number one. Now, that's a cool collection of short stories. It's close to 60 stories by about 45 or 50 different authors. And this was from a contest we ran some years ago and really, really came up with some cool stories. We're running that contest again. Anybody who's got a short story, you want to get it in our next anthology, send it to us, contest@freshinkgroup.com. We're also collecting for another anthology, Short Mini Memoirs, where you tell a, you know, 3, 4, 5-page story about something true that happened to you and something that was meaningful and that maybe we could learn a lesson from or have a laugh at or whatever. That's Fresh Ink Group Short Story Showcase number one. Now, Robert McKenzie has got a series called The Chair. Books 1, 2, and 3 are out. 4 and 5 are in progress right now. And The Chair Volume 1 is next on our list. Above that, we've got Figuratively Speaking, Thesaurus of Expressions and Phrases by J. Ash Looney. That's one of his two word books, which are performing especially well in India right now. Above that, How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson by Kenneth Lindquist. This is the instructor's edition. This is for people who want to learn how to get themselves certified as certified drivers at instructors, depending on what the requirements are in their various jurisdictions. There is also a separate book from that that's the parents edition. for parents who have teenagers or young adults who are learning to drive or not real experience, and they want to help them be safer drivers. Above that, I Won't Be Your Escape Goat by David Carroll. It's called David Carroll's Homemade, H-O-M-A-D-E, Social Media Blunders. And that's the hardcover edition. Has made our list already. See that, Beam? He didn't think he needed a hardcover, did he? Yeah, I remember. I remember having that conversation with, a book like this, all we need is a soft cover. Yeah, I'll bet you we sell some hards, David. He does a lot of events too. He gets, since he's a local news guy and all that, he gets invited to speak at different functions, and he always takes boxes of books with him, and sells the fool out of them. So more power to you, David. Next up, Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson. That's the first of two books in her illustrated chapter book series for young people, young adults, children, although all ages seem to be enjoying this book. And it's about Sassy, and she learns about her AME Church. The second book, which is Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret, also follows her adventures. Now, above that, The Diang, book one of the Diang Trilogy by M.C. Howard, who is also the person who did the mermaid paintings that we're trying to get out next week or so. I'm starting to be a little skeptical of that because she's just spent a week in Mexico. And she came back from Mexico a few days ago and wound up in the hospital. So we've had to postpone our meeting for this afternoon until this weekend. I hope she gets better. Hang in there, Maureen. We're pulling for you, and we'll get this book out pretty soon. Next up, David Carroll's I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, the paperback edition. Look at that. They're selling almost equally. There's like two copies difference between their sales. Take that, David. Above that, Shipwrecked and Rescued, The City of Bangor, the hardcover edition by Larry Jorgensen. He's a retired journalist and historian, and this is the true story about 240 1920s Chryslers that were being shipped across Lake Superior and never made it. What happened? And what happened to the crew of the ship? And did those cars ever get recovered? And boy, what would one of those be worth today? You want to find out what's going on? Buy this book, and it's a lot of fun. It's cool. It's full of historical pictures, all the inside info, especially those of you who are interested in maritime history and Northern Michigan history. Above that, The Ort Federation, To the Stars, The Second Ort Chronicle by Robert G. Willis-Croft, which just took first place in the Colorado Authors League ratings. So above that, now we've got Larry Landgraf's Into Summer. This is one of the four books in his dystopian novel series about when things break down and there's no more government and people have to try to fend for themselves. Each of these is named for a season. This one's called Into Summer, Dawn of a New Age. Above that, My Three Wishes, Memoir of a Hawaiian Dancer Whose Family Troupe Traveled the World. That's by Kanoi Kay. Boy, she's a fun lady, isn't she, Beam?
Yes, she is. We had her on the show some time ago. We should have her back.
She and her family became a troupe of Hawaiian dancers, and they traveled the world. They became very famous, and she details the adventures in this book, and it's a wonderful memoir. It's just a lot of fun. Kanoi Kay's My Three Wishes. Back to Robert G. Willis-Croft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Ort Chronicle. That's the prequel to the Ort Federation, the one that just won the award. His third book in that Ort Chronicle series, called Ran, is in progress right now. We're hoping to have that thing out sometime this winter. Now, paperback edition of The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon. Country Music Hall of Fame drummer who played with the supergroup Alabama for almost three decades. And then when they were doing their farewell tour, which turned out not to be their farewell tour because they're touring again now, things kind of fell apart. Yeah, things kind of fell apart, and there wound up being a lawsuit filed, and it got a little bit ugly, and Mark tells the story, and he tells the truth. He takes responsibility for his own mistakes, and he takes the high road. It's a wonderful memoir about life on the road, living the dream as a country music star. Now, above that, A.K. Wingler's How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida. That's one of the three food truck business books by her we have published, including Tennessee and Georgia. The paperback edition of Shipwrecked and Rescued is above that. And above that, the hardcover edition of Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament by Janice D. Toney. That's the chapter book about bullying. Now, Helen Burrell, Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. That's an in-depth look at all of the politics that's going on right now with enforcement over the opioid epidemic, and sometimes doctors are being harassed and locked up, and there's a lot of stuff going on there. Helen breaks it all down. She takes a good hard look at what's happening and even has some fun with it too. So American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. Now, the paperback edition of the Dayang, book one of the Dayang trilogy, is above that. And that right now we're in the top five. So American Agony was number five. The Dayang, book one of the Dayang trilogy, is number four. Number three, Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by retired U.S. Naval Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate. Submariner has been bouncing around in the top five slots since we published that book in the past. It's about a year ago, I think, we published this thing. And it's still out there performing very well. So congratulations, Jerry. Number three this week. And if you're going to get pushed down a couple of slots, it's some good company that's pushing you down, because in the number two slot, Mark Herndon, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip, and that is the hardcover edition. So that shows you right there that people who are big fans and true fans are willing to spend a couple extra dollars and get that nice dust-jacketed hardcover edition, because they want to keep it on their shelf. And those of you out there who are Mark Herndon fans and don't have the book yet, you could also go to markherndon.com and order the book directly from him. And he'll inscribe it for you, and he'll put a note in it for you if you want to give it as a birthday gift to somebody who's an Alabama fan or something like that. So The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Now that gets us to number one. Number one is by Dr. Abigail Miriam Hamilton Hughgenny, and it's called There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation. Now these are about 35 or 40, I think it is, black folks who grew up in the what they call the Low Country out there in the Carolinas, in the Green Pond area, and who, despite, you know, a lot of hardship and whatnot growing up, wound up moving on and becoming very successful at some very important work. So it's a profile of all of these different people and what they went on to accomplish. And it's a great motivational thing. It's a good history piece. It's just a wonderful book. And Abigail's been holding some events. And when she holds events, she sells out. And I'm guessing she's probably held another event sometime in the past week or so, because this book has skyrocketed up now to being three times the sales of our number two on the list. So There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond After the Emancipation by Abigail Hughgenny. Congratulations, everybody.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of Abigail Hughgenny and Mark Herndon, these are two former guests of this show. Mark's been on a couple of times, and if you missed those episodes, guess what? We've got an archive, and here's how you can find our archive.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archive on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
A small rural community in the Low Country along Ocean Highway, Green Pond, South Carolina, has long lacked cultural and educational opportunities for its young people's future success. Many have gone on to serve in the highest levels of education, government, public service, elected office, business, and medicine. With so much success against the odds, surely there must be something in the water. Abigail Hughgenny chronicles the impact just 42 of Green Pond's children have gone on to make in the world. All full-color editions include photos from around town and local translations of down-home sayings. These inspirational stories prove that, regardless of one's background, we can all find our own path toward greatness. An excellent reference, keepsake, gift, and addition to every library. There Must Be Something in the Water, Anthology of the Fourth Generation, Descendants of Green Pond, After the Emancipation, is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right, so let's meet this week's guest. Her author name is V. Period S. Period Kamanis. We're going to use her first name, Via, when we're talking to her today. V.S. Kamanis has enjoyed an exciting and varied career in the law and arts. As an attorney, she has been a criminal prosecutor for county and state agencies. She's argued criminal appeals for the prosecution and defense, conducted complex civil litigation, and worked for appellate judges and courts, most recently as a supervising editor of appellate decisions. Ms. Kamanis is also an accomplished dancer and has performed, taught, and choreographed in California, Colorado, and New York. Short fiction by Ms. Kamanis has been widely published in literary journals, anthologies, and magazines such as Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, The Crooked Road Volume 3, The Best Laid Plans, and Me Too Short Stories, among others. Her award-winning stories are collected in 5 volumes, including Your Pick, Selected Stories, winner of the 2019 Eric Hoffer Award for Best Short Story Collection. Her novels of legal suspense feature prosecutor Dana Hargrove, who, like the author, juggles family life with a high-powered professional career in criminal justice. Ms. Kamanis is a member of the Mystery Writers of America. Welcome to the show, Via.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So I'm kind of curious. You ever thought about doing a story about a dancing DA?
Well, that's interesting because Dana Hargrove, my protagonist in my novels, has a sister who is a dancer. So I had to get dance in there somehow.
All right.
It's a big part of my life.
Yeah, now what you need is for somebody to post one of those one-star reviews that say, this writer obviously doesn't know anything about the dancing industry.
I would have to say something about that.
Yeah.
Dance was my first love growing up. I had dreams of being a ballerina professionally, and when that kind of imploded when I had an injury when I was 20 years old. At that point, I decided, well, I have to change plans, and I went to college and then law school after that. Hmm. So, but dance has stayed in my life. It's very fortunate that I had that background because it's something that you carry with you throughout life, both as a form of exercise. Just it's the best exercise in the world to go to a dance class, the music, the artistry, watching other people exercise, and it's the full body, gets conditioned. And I've also done performing throughout the years off and on, and have taught off and on also ballet and contemporary forms of dance. So
wow.
I just feel fortunate that my parents gave me the dance classes when they didn't have much money to afford much for our family. I came from a very large family, so.
Wow, that's one of the wonderful things about dance that I've always thought was cool is you take your instrument everywhere you go. You know, you go on a camp out, anywhere you go, and, you know, if the mood strikes you, you can get up and dance, especially if you're hearing the music or everybody else is dancing or whatever. Whereas that piano player, he's like, well, okay, I'll sit over here. I then bring my piano with me, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So Via, you've danced everywhere from California to Colorado and New York. You're in New York right now. Where are you originally from, and where all have you lived?
Yes, I've lived in New York for many years, but I'm native Californian. I was born in Oakland, California, and my father, Gunnar Kamanis, was a Latvian World War II refugee. He and his family had to flee Latvia during World War II when the Germans and the Russians converged over that small Baltic state, and left everything behind and were displaced persons and in a DP camp for many years during the war and after the war. And then my father was fortunate to get a scholarship to study in California, where he met my mother, a native Californian. And my father went on to get a PhD in engineering. He worked many years for Hughes Aircraft designing communication satellites. He was a very, very smart guy, so I learned a lot from him. My parents did split when I was 8 years old, and my mother married my stepfather. So I'm very fortunate to have had two wonderful fathers. My stepfather was a composer and a musician and a music professor at University of California, Berkeley. And when my mother married him, she had me, my sister, and brother. There was three of us kids. She married my stepfather, who was widowed and had three kids. So it was 3 plus 3. So we were
Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
And then they had another one, and then my half sister. So there were seven of us, and us kids
Oliver.
Had a good time. It was a crowded house, so we had a good time. So I have a fond memory of growing up with all my siblings in California.
Now, growing up, what kind of childhood did you have? Were you into reading and writing back then, or you just strictly danced back then?
Well, we all went to the public schools, and I was quite academic. I really enjoyed school. I enjoyed studying and learning, and I enjoyed writing when there were writing assignments, but I didn't really think of writing fiction until later in my life. I was very concentrated on my dance as, when I was a child and into teenagerhood, and I performed in some local dance companies, ballet companies, and one of them was in Oakland and one of them was in San Francisco. And I did all that before I was injured and had to stop. I did not think of a writing career or writing fiction until I got into my legal career, actually, when I needed an outlet from the work environment, I think is how I got to it.
I picture you sitting there writing a brief and thinking, wow, fiction would make this a lot easier.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as a lawyer, you do a lot of writing. And my first job as a lawyer was with the New York District Attorney's Office in Manhattan. And I started out in the Appeals Bureau, where I was writing briefs, and I was doing oral arguments and getting a lot of ideas then for fiction because there was an awful lot going on in the criminal justice system in Manhattan, and certainly a lot of different kinds of cases crossed my desk, and my imagination got going, and I started thinking of it as a great outlet in my spare time. And I think I even went to a fiction writing course when I was living in Manhattan and working as an assistant DA. So that's how I got started writing fiction.
Yeah,
that would have been in the 80s.
I've long thought, too, that attorneys who are going to spend a lot of time writing briefs, appeal briefs and things like that, should learn storytelling, because the best briefs I've ever read are the ones that actually tell a little bit of a story weaving through there in order to make their arguments. Whereas the ones who don't tell a story, they just put all their arguments together and put all the citations in there. Those are boring drag reads, So, yeah, I think the attorneys who can tell stories do it better.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And with any brief, usually there are two sections. I mean, there is the factual section, and you do, I like to try and make those as interesting as possible. The facts are usually very interesting. And the law section does tend to get a little dry. You have to put all those citations in and do it all accurately and put in the proper precedents and so forth. But, but obviously I did a lot of writing and got my writing edited by excellent attorneys along the way. So in a way, that was kind of partially some training for getting into fiction writing, I think.
Yeah. So you have a law degree?
Yes. My schooling is, I went to, first my undergraduate degree was at University of California, Berkeley in sociology. And then I went to Boulder, Colorado for law school. They had a great law school there, and I also enjoyed moving to a different area of the country and seeing something different and being in the mountains, and did a little mountain climbing, not much, and a little skiing when I was there, but mostly a lot of studying, which you do in law school. And after that, I worked for a judge on the Colorado Supreme Court. Really, when you work for a judge, it's really a great, great relationship. It's pretty much one-on-one when you hear of an attorney who's clerking for a judge. You get to discuss the cases that the judge is working on and help the judge write them, and had a great relationship with that judge on the Colorado Supreme Court. And then after that, I moved to New York. So that would have been the early 80s when I moved to New York. I had a sister living in New York City, and I was attracted to the excitement, and I just got to go there and try it. You know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, right?
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've heard
according
that
to Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. Now we're talking to author V.S. Kamanis, people. So if you want to call in, the phone number is 516-453-9902.
What drives a man to spend 26 years performing night after night? To persevere through a stifling tour bus, bad food, strange women, flared tempers, a plane nearly blown from the sky? Just how did that troubled military brat with a dream claw his way from dirt floor dive bar shows to the world's biggest stages? Aviator, author, and Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon lived that dream playing with Alabama, one of the most popular and celebrated bands of all time. He learned some hard lessons about people and life, the music industry, the accolades and awards, how easy it is to lose it all, and how hard it is to survive, to embrace sobriety, to live even one more day. Herndon's poignant memoir offers a tale at once cautionary and inspirational, delightful and heartbreaking, funny yet deeply personal. From innocence to rebellion to acceptance, can a man still flourish when the spotlight dims? Are true forgiveness, redemption, and serenity even possible when the powerful say everything you achieved somehow doesn't even count? That you're not who you and everyone who matters thought you were? Find all this and more in Mark's remarkable memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip, proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in paperback and ebooks, and now in the keepsake dust-jacketed hardcover edition demanded by true fans. Mark Herndon refuses to slow down. So look back, look ahead, and join him on the trip. He's taking the high road.
All right. Yeah, and like Stephen mentioned earlier, if you go to markherndon.com, you can purchase a copy that Mark will autograph for you, and he'll even inscribe it. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
All right. So we are talking with Via Kamanis. And Via, we've heard about your day job and dancing and a lot of this stuff. Do you have any other hobbies or interests that you do to, if you have downtime, free time?
Well, those are my main, I guess I wouldn't even call them hobbies. I would call them life occupations. I am retired from my law career, so I do not have to go into the office anymore. So my time is consumed with dance, both taking dance class and teaching. I'm a teacher at a ballet academy here in Westchester County, New York. I also actually have a, you know, during the pandemic, there was a big problem for dancers who were dying to get into the studio, and the studios were closed, and we started dancing at home on Zoom. And I did teach on Zoom for quite a while. And then when I got tired of that, I decided to start a YouTube channel. So that's another, I don't know if you would call that a hobby or a pastime, but I decided to film at home or record several dance classes for my students who wanted to continue to dance at home. So I do have, if anyone out there is interested in dance, you can dance at home to one of my videos. All you have to do is search for V.S. Kamanis on YouTube, and you'll find it there. There are some ballet classes, and there are some jazz dance classes on there. So that's kind of a thing that I like to do.
Cool.
And other than that, the writing is takes up my free time, and of course there's always family. I have my husband and two grown daughters who no longer live with us, but certainly they're always on my mind, and we talk by phone and text and get together whenever we can. So that's pretty much my life now. But I did retire from my law career, which spanned the 80s and 90s, and then I took a big break from the law career when my daughters were young. And at that time, I did another little thing that lasted for about a decade, and that is I opened and owned and managed a dancewear store while I was also doing some part-time teaching of dance. That was in the 90s, and the name of my store was Pirouette Dancewear. I had a lot of fun with that. So that was like a break from my law career, and then I went back to law after that.
You're a Jill of all trades.
I've jumped back and forth between my different things that I love to do, and I've been very fortunate that way. But I didn't start the store until the first part of my law career, as I said, was in the 80s into the 90s, and that was about 5 years in the New York County District Attorney's Office. I did both appellate work and trial work. And then after the next 5 years, I worked for the New York State Organized Crime Task Force.
Ooh.
And my main responsibility at that agency was I worked on a big investigation and a big case where we were going after Colombian narcotics cartel money laundering. And that investigation kind of led to and the idea behind my first novel in the Dana Hargrove series.
Wow, authenticity. Yeah, that's cool. Now you've taken that off in your own direction, I assume, or are you still mining some real cases or real investigations and working those into stories?
Well, it's all in my brain somewhere. So a good source of many of my ideas, certainly for the Dana Hargrove novels and for short stories as well, has been many of the cases that I have worked on. And, you know, all that knowledge is just in there, the facts, the situations, the courtroom dynamics, the law. And if I am writing something that's a legal thriller or a legal suspense story or novel, if I feel like I'm rusty on any point of law, I'll do a little research. But other than that, all this stuff is floating around in my brain from the experience. So I'm lucky that way.
Hmm. Now, you had mentioned two grown daughters. Is there anybody else in your family that writes?
No, there is not, interestingly enough. But both my daughters are excellent writers what they're in. One of my daughters is a somatic movement therapist, and she writes her own kind of advertising and copy and kind of motivational types of posts that she does, and she's an excellent writer. That's Lillian. And my other daughter is a data scientist who is also just an excellent writer. But no, they have not published anything. They certainly have the skills, and they like to run to me and run their writing past me if they are feeling like they want to be edited because of my experience as a writer and as an editor. I was an editor for many years and the last part of my career at in the court system.
Okay, so listeners, we are talking with author V.S. Kamanis, and we will be right back.
Now, from science fiction master Robert G. Williscroft, the Oort Federation, to the stars, the second Oort Chronicle. As the Oort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While Thorpe's group terraforms Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Oort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks by Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah.
Award-winning book, number two there.
Yes, it is. Congratulations to Mr. Williscroft. All right, we're going to take a phone call here. We got on the line Dr. Helen Burrell has been patiently waiting. Hello, Dr. Helen. How are you tonight?
Hi.
Hi,
how
Helen.
Are you guys?
Hey.
Doing well.
Yeah, your author there is very multi-talented.
Yeah.
Yes, isn't she?
Thank you.
You know the question I'm always going to ask. It's process.
Go ahead and ask.
What is her process?
The what creator, is your writing
you know?
Process?
My creative process?
Pantser, outliner.
And, yeah.
Well, I like a lot of preparation. I have six novels in the Dana Hargrove series, and each one, I'm going to estimate, took me about a year and a half to write. The first 6 months, I think, are just a mental process where ideas are forming as far as usually I start out with one major case, a legal case that's going to kind of form the center of the novel. And then there are a number of subplots. And so some of these subplots usually end up being a little bit complicated to make sure that they intertwine correctly. So the next part is that I do a detailed outline, and I wouldn't even call it an outline. It's more of a short summary of each chapter. So I go chapter by chapter and write a paragraph or two with how I want that chapter to go. And I do all that before I start writing, and then I write from the beginning to the end. I go right straight through, and invariably, the outline changes. there's nothing you can do about that. This happens, you know, you're going along, you read the little blurb that you wrote a couple of months ago about chapter five, I'm supposed to be doing this, and I go, wait a minute, there might be a little inconsistency with how something happened in an earlier chapter, or there might be a plot point that's just not quite cohesive. Things happen as you're writing, and so it's a flexible outline. It's definitely a flexible outline, and it works well for me eventually. I start each day writing by reading what I wrote the day before, and I usually edit it lightly, whatever I wrote the day before, and that gets me set up for the day's writing. And then I just go straight through. And then when I'm done with what I think is a decent draft. That's still got a lot of more work to go, because I very carefully read my books several times before I actually send them out to the world. So I usually, as I said, there may be some changes that happen to the outline in the course of writing. And then when I go through the first reading from beginning to end, I really try and make a block of time to do that so it's not interrupted and really just go right through it. And then I might realize that there are some other things in there that are inconsistent or need to be clarified, and then I do some more editing. And then I do even more reading of it, fine-tuning after each reading. And my biggest help in my technique is to finally read the entire novel out loud to myself. And
wow.
I discover so much.
I'll bet.
So by reading out loud, I would just advise every author to do this. I don't know if it works as well for everybody else, but you will find things when you're reading out loud to yourself about pacing. Does the pace feel good? Mm-hmm. You wrote like a paragraph long sentence and you're out of breath reading it. That's just too long of a sentence. You'll discover that. You'll discover more typos, or you will discover missing words or extra words. Mm-hmm. And very, very importantly, to me anyway, I find that dialogue is a real important part of fiction. And you will discover, reading it out loud, does this sound like the way people talk in real life? Mm-hmm. Or does it sound fake? Or does it sound like, does it sound like prose and not dialogue? And then you can edit accordingly. So that's my big thing I love to do before any of my writing goes out to the world.
That's very elaborate. That's very wonderful. It sounds familiar. That's good for fiction and nonfiction, how you described it.
And for writing legal briefs, even.
My book that's out, that's nonfiction, the opioid. This writer does things even more elaborately than I do, but I followed a similar kind of process, the rereading, the editing, how does it sound. So it's very good that you are very aware, Ms. Ryder. I want to give you congratulations for all your careers. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I've enjoyed all of it. You know, writing is exciting, and you have to love it to continue doing it. So
they're in your head, the characters? They live in your head, right?
That's the other thing about writing several books with the same characters, that you begin to know them, and it gets a little bit easier with each successive book. Because they become like part of your family, and you get to know them. And the thing about my series, you know, I'm using the word series very loosely. It's not really a series. It's six books that take my protagonist, Dana Hargrove, at different points of her life and career, very distinct points. The first novel, she's only 26 years old, and the last novel, she's 60 years old. Each novel is about 6 or 7 years in between. So you'll see her as a rookie the first time. She's a rookie prosecutor. She's kind of naive. And then the next novel, she's a young wife and mother, and she's working on homicide cases and juggling her career with her family life. And then progressively she gets older. Her children are older. The novels involve her family life and her children, and they've just become part of my life, too. So it's fun that way.
Will she age out of the series?
So how many more careers are you going to go into? You are so prolific.
Well, I've just enjoyed all of it. I've been very fortunate. And I think the physical exercise is an outlet for anything mental as well. So, you know, It's interesting. I meet a lot of lawyers in ballet class. You'd be surprised. Uh-huh. Because
you know something? That's the next title of your next book. I like that. Lawyers in ballet class.
Yeah, there you go. Followed up by dancing for the jury.
Wouldn't that be a great and a nice cover? I can picture it. Well, I want to congratulate you. I think you do wonderful work. I'm going to have to read your books.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for calling in, Dr. Helen. And we just happen to have the commercial for your book, Dr. Helen, queued up next.
Oh, wow.
So
okay,
thanks for
great.
Calling in. And we'll be back talking with B.S. Kamanis in a couple minutes.
Managing pain with opioids is a science, except politics, money, and overzealous law enforcement are denying American patients the relief they so desperately need. Demonizing the best pain reliever we have leads to needless suffering, even suicides, and it drives the rise in deadly street drugs. Helen Burrell gathers and presents the evidence, the intimidation, the raids of clinics, the chilling effect on those very professionals we trust to care for our loved ones and ourselves. She looks hard at the Veterans Administration, Drug Enforcement Agency, Department of Justice, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Chapters include The Suboxone Hoax, The Wrong Arms of the Law, and The Epidemic of Death. Now in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, American Agony is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Read American Agony now, or you might be the next one hurt.
All right. We have a question over here on Twitter. Actually, it's a couple of questions. Robert McKenzie, author of The Chair, he's over on Twitter, and he says, hi, V.S. Kamanis. Cal Berkeley, huh? The mother of the UC system. Let me read this again. What is your favorite thing you have written about? What is the most memorable book you've read? And who is your favorite character you have created, who you identify with most? So we'll take what is your favorite thing you have written about?
The favorite thing I've written about, that's very interesting. Well, I've written, what I like to do is write on so many different themes. I've written like 100 different short stories and they're all very different. So I like the diversity of that. But I guess if you would say favorite, I am very proud of the Dana Hargrove series and the sixth novel, which was published last year, I think would be my favorite of the group. It's called Power Blind, and it's contemporary. It takes place in 2022, and it's kind of the culmination of the series. So I'm very proud of that and enjoyed writing that very much. And what was his other question?
The second question is, what is the most memorable book you've read? Classics?
Yeah.
Or Christian Bloch thriller?
At least a couple examples of memorable books, if not the most.
Couple of examples. Well, that's a hard one. I mean, there are so many. I'm constantly reading. Some of my favorite authors are people like Amor Towles. All three of his books are unbelievably wonderful. The A Gentleman in Moscow, Lincoln Highway, Rules of Civility. Just love those books. Ann Patchett's one of my favorite writers. Short story writers, I love Alice Munro. She was the
she's
Nobel
a favorite of mine.
Winner. I just love her short stories and classic short stories. I like Catherine Mansfield, and there are just so many wonderful short story writers. I like Raymond Carver, very laconic and succinct. There's just so much that I love. I'm constantly reading. I'm sure you two are also.
Yeah. Now, the third part of this question, I'm guessing we probably already know the answer. He asks, who is your favorite character you have created who you identify with most?
Well, I guess I would say Dana Hargrove.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But, you know, the strange thing is, this is the wonderful thing about writing fiction. In a way, I identify with every character I write while I'm writing it, because as a fiction writer, you get to pull little bits and pieces here and there from your life and put it into action and into the character. So, this is why people read fiction. They relate to the situations, the human situations that people are in. And so while I guess I could say I relate to Dana Hargrove in a way, I'm really not her at all. I kind of admire her more than me. she's like, the 2020 hindsight when, you know, you wish you said something. She says a lot of good things that I wish I could have said in particular situations. So, yeah, I guess
too bad you can't edit life, huh?
Yeah, right. But that's life. It's a learning experience every day. But, yeah, I guess I would have to say Dana Hargrove. But there are many characters in my short stories as well.
Robert, thanks for the questions on Twitter. We really appreciate those.
And we are going to be right back.
In the days leading up to her departure on the yacht, the Dyane, Catherine Howell had a sixth sense revelation that the U.S. government would attempt to take her out before she could return to the United States. Thus begins a web of intrigue involving the CIA, the military, the alleged stillborn birth of her infant son, and the loss of her husband in Vietnam. But is he truly dead? Catherine's sixth sense tells her the man is still alive, and they very nearly cross paths. Catherine's story should be told with caution, as one never knows which government agency is listening to your phone calls, reading your mail, or following you wherever you go. How did Catherine end up living on a yacht with a CIA agent? Will she ever discover the truth? Grab your copy of The Dyane, Book 1 of The Dyane Trilogy by M.C. Howell, in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. The Dyane by M.C. Howell.
All right, we're talking to author V.S. Kamanis. She has the Dana Hargrove Legal Series, and she's in a whole lot of anthologies, short story collections, and has some other books as well. So let's talk about your books, V.S. Where would you like to start? Do you want to talk about some short story collections?
Yes. I put out 5 collections of my own work, and I'm in, I think, about 4 anthologies with, those are multiple authors, of my own collections. What I did, how I started out with publishing those collections was I had a large number of stories that I'd written over the years in probably mostly in the 90s and the early 00s. And some of them had been published in magazines and literary journals, and a lot of them had not. And I loosely categorized them into 3 categories, which I call the Tales of series. There are 3 Tales of books, and they are Dust of the Universe, Tales of Family, Everyone But Us, Tales of Women, and Malocclusion, Tales of Misdemeanor. And put all those collections together, 3 collections, and they all went out kind of around 2012. And I was so glad I did, because I got such wonderful feedback from people that I just felt all this stuff was in my computer and I just wanted to get it out to the world. So those are the 3 that I started with. And then I did another collection called Love and Crime Stories a couple of years later. And then my 5th collection is an award winner. It's kind of a best of collection. It gathers up the best stories from those tales of collections that I've received feedback and comments from people that are the stories that people liked the most, that got the most, you know, engagement and emotional involvement from the readers. And I put them together in the collection entitled Your Pick Selected Stories. And that one did win the Eric Hoffer Award for the best story collection. So I'm quite proud of that one. And if anyone is interested in my short stories, that might be a place to get started to take a look at those. Those are my absolute best, in my opinion. And then the other anthologies are really interesting. One of them is called Autumn Noir, and I have a story in that one that's very noirish, crime story. And then there's also a collection entitled Me Too Short Stories, which are all fiction, but they're on the theme of the Me Too movement. And let's see, there's also an Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine anthology that I'm in called The Crooked Road. And I've had a couple of stories published by Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine over the years, and that is just a very fine magazine with a real diverse collection of crime authors. So I would recommend that to anybody who likes mystery or suspense or noir, all those kind of genres usually end up in that magazine and also in their anthologies, which they call The Crooked Road. I think I'm Crooked Road Volume 3 by Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine.
Yeah, with a very cool-looking cover on it here. The six Dana Hargrove novels that you have out now, I hadn't realized that you had 6 and 7 year gaps between them, so what I tried to ask earlier is I was curious, is your character going to age out of these stories, or might you at some point go back and insert some earlier tales of Dana Hargrove's and fill in some gaps between some of those years, or how do you plan to deal with that?
Well, good question. I pretty much have put that aside for now, and I did put out a 2022 revised edition on all the books that has an afterword indicating that I'm putting Dana Hargrove to rest for now, but I may, if the urge takes me, I may go back, and I would have that option of either plugging into years in between the years of those other novels, or maybe even going into an older age. As I said, I left her at the age of 60 in 2022, and she's not retired yet. We could get her at age 65 or 66 as an appellate judge, but she was an appellate judge in 2022, and when you have all that background from when she was a prosecutor and the cases that she prosecuted, some of her former cases came back to haunt her in some of these books, with some people, one in particular, Seven Shadows, which is the second to the last book. It takes place in 2015. One of her former cases, the defendant got out of prison and decided to come and stalk her and her family. So that was the premise of that novel. But there is a wealth of things in her background and in the novels that I could go back and plug in. But at this point, I've moved on and I have another work in progress that's very different at this time.
Okay. We're going to ask you about that work in progress for a minute here, but we've got a note here that you're offering these Dana Hargrove mysteries as doubles.
Oh, yes, yes. Good. I'm glad you reminded me, because I did want to tell your listeners that if you're at all interested in trying these out, there are some very cheap or free ways that you can try my novels. They have also been published in what I call the Dana Hargrove doubles. So there's six of them, so I put two books in each of the doubles. So there is a books one and two in the first Dana Hargrove double, and then there's books three and four in the second one, and then there's books five and six. And they're all on Kindle Unlimited, so if any of your listeners are on Kindle Unlimited. You can pick them up for free. But I'm running some sales. So right now, the first Dana Hargrove double that has the two novels, Thursday's List and Homicide Charge, that one is currently on sale for a mere 99 cents in ebook. So you can read two books for like less than 50 cents each if you want to give them a try.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to run that sale through September 6th. It's on sale now through September 6th. And then in successive weeks, September 7 to 13, I'm going to do the second Dana Hargrove double with novels 3 and 4. That'll be 99 cents. And then the week after that, September 14th to the 20th, I'll do the third one for 99 cents. So good way to jump in and get some inexpensive reading.
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to go over and grab the one that's out there right now. Now, going back to your work in progress, what is this about, and when can readers expect to see that in stores?
Well, the work in progress, as I said, is very different. I don't know how you would classify it genre-wise. It might be a little bit more literary. Has a little bit of a historical, recent history element to it. But the book is about an interracial couple in the post-Vietnam War era, the 70s, in Berkeley. So it goes back. I'm kind of, you know, picking up my background and my upbringing, because I was raised in the East Bay area of California during this very tumultuous time. I was coming of age in, you know, the hippie years and the Vietnam War years. So one of my protagonists is a Vietnam War veteran, and his girlfriend is a law student at Bolt Hall in Berkeley, California, and they have a very interesting relationship. They have a baby, and the woman leaves when the baby is very small. She just kind of disappears. And so there's an element of suspense in this novel where the daughter of this couple searches for the mother that she never knew. And it leads to a very dramatic confrontation at the end of the book. So I've had a lot of fun writing it. It's in draft form now. It's very close to being finished. And I'm looking at ways that I want to proceed with it in terms of publishing it.
Okay. Right. So some of your books are published by Opus 9. Is that you, or is that a different company? And what is Opus 9?
Yeah. Opus 9 Books is an imprint that's just my books. It's my own personal independent imprint. And my inspiration for coming up with the name of my imprint, Opus 9 Books, is, and I'll read the dedication to you that appears in all of my books at the end. It says, "All works published by Opus 9 Books are dedicated to the 9 members of the family headed by John and Kate Swackhammer at 3 South Trail, Orinda, California, a large world under one small roof." And I'm referring to my own family. 9 of us under one small roof. John Swackhammer was my stepfather, music professor. My mother was an actress in local productions, and they were very, very artistic, musical family, excited about social issues and politics, and had a big social circle, and I have very fond memories of that. So I came up with the name Opus 9 Books for my imprint, and I dedicate it to my siblings and my parents who are no longer with us.
So now, who does your covers for you?
My
or
covers,
do you do them yourself?
I've had a number of different – well, interestingly, my favorite cover was done by my daughter Evelyn, Dust of the Universe. If you bring that up, and take a look at that. Dust of the Universe, Tales of Family. It's my absolute favorite cover. My daughter, who's very artistic, made that for me, but she's not in the business of making covers, so you can't contact her. but my covers, my Dana Hargrove covers, some of them are very, very nice. Homicide Chart got definitely noticed, and Power Blind and Seven Shadows. Those are done, the graphic artist, his name is Roy Migabon, and I believe he's still in the business of making graphics for the covers. And then I have another cover artist for my paperbacks, and his name is Valdas Miskinis. And if any of your listeners are interested in getting information about these people, you can always contact me through my website. My website is vskamanis.com. And if you have any questions about anything we've talked about today, I have a contact form that will come directly to me, and I'll let you know whatever you'd like to know, whether it's right. My covers or my books or whatever.
So, Via, have you had any kind of fan reaction that really stands out in your mind, where you met somebody at an event or got a fan letter or got a review or something that was poignant to you, something that stands out in your mind that kind of made this all worthwhile?
There definitely is one that stands out in my mind, has for many years. It's just so lovely. If you'd let me read it, I wrote it down here.
Please.
I would love to. This was a review of Dust of the Universe when it first came out. And when I was first publishing my work, as I said, the short story collections, the tales of collections were the first to come out. I was a little insecure and, you know, didn't know if I was doing the right thing. But this review just was so lovely. And he says, quote, "There are rare occasions when you find yourself in the hands of an author so unarguably gifted that your critical faculties are temporarily cut off. Within pages, you've slipped into the experience that all books promise but few deliver. You vanish for a few hours, disappearing into other places, other lives, and come out the other side thinking or crying or smiling, sometimes all three, and knowing more about the human experience than you did going in. Dust of the Universe is one of those rare books. There are stories here that I think I will remember forever. They've stayed with me in the weeks since I read them and make me smile even now as I call to mind their wonderfully flawed characters, their gentle humor, their twists and surprises, and without exception, the compassionate insight at their core." End
wow.
quote. So that just, wow. Oh my goodness, that just really got me. If he was crying, I was crying. So that stuff does make it all worthwhile. Although it's so wonderful to get these kind of reactions and responses and, you know, readers identifying with your work, as wonderful as that is, the bottom line is you have to still write for yourself, because this kind of, you know, the comments and the feedback that you get, it's fleeting. It comes, you know, in spurts, and then it goes away, and you can't have that be your sole motivation. It's wonderful, but yeah.
You can't live and die on the opinions of others. But on the other hand, when you get one like this, it also tells you there's others out there that feel that way too. They just don't all write to you. They don't all tell you. But it tells you that they are hearing your work. They're hearing your message. They're hearing what you're trying to say. And that's pretty cool.
Exactly. Very cool.
Now, Via, what sort of advice would you have for up-and-coming authors, and even authors that have been around for a while? What kind of advice would you give to them for the whole process?
Well, I would say kind of what I just said a little bit, that write because you love it, because you love the process of using your imagination, and you love words, you love putting different combinations of words together. You love editing yourself, and you just love the process, because ultimately, as I said, it has to be mostly for yourself and not for, you know, if you're looking for fame and fortune, well, maybe a very, very tiny group of authors get that. but yeah, you have to love the process. And if you get the feedback from people who have identified with your work and related to it, that is just very rewarding, but it can't be the only thing. And probably the other advice I would say is try not to second guess trends. Try not to write what you think other people want you to write, because, you know, things, society changes, what's popular changes, and you have to write what you want to write, what you know about, what you feel emotionally attached to. And if you do that, you're going to come out with a good story, and story is what writing is all about.
There you go. Yeah,
good
boy
advice.
Wizards are going to go out of style at some point here.
Yeah,
vampires.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, I don't know how many vampire books we can have. Yes.
So our guest has been Via Escamones. Via, how do people find you out there? You mentioned your website already. Tell us about that again, and any social media you're on, any handles, any way that we can find you.
Yes. As I said, I'm very, very happy to get direct contact from any of your listeners or readers through my website, vscamones, all one word, .com, and you'll see the tab for the contact page, and I respond pretty reliably. So I would just love to hear from you. I'm on just about most social media platforms, except I don't do TikTok. So don't look for me on TikTok. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on BookBub, Goodreads, Amazon. My books are distributed through all online retailers, including Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iBooks, and so forth. And I would just say on any of these platforms, any platform that's your favorite one, just put in my name. And you should be able to find me. And as I mentioned also, the YouTube, I have the YouTube channel. If there are any dancers out there, take a look at my YouTube channel and join me for a dance class.
All right. Sometimes when I finish working on a project, I feel like getting up and dancing a jig, but you know how to do that. All right. So, V. Escamones, it's been a blast having you on the show, and we encourage everybody to get out there and discover V. Escamones, her books. She's got lots of short stories, got the Dana Hargrove series, a lot of cool things. So check that out. And then remember to come back next week for the podcast. Subscribe to that newsletter if you want to get that link in your inbox every week. And next week, we're going to have comic book creator and publisher, Artie Smith. And then after that,
We have a return visit from C.J. Peterson. After that,
her podcast in crime's partner, Michael Scott Clifton, is going to be on the show, too. We've had each of them once before, and they're always a lot of fun.
Now, the 2 weeks after that are going to be encore presentations, reruns. One will be Caleb Pirtle III, and the following week after that will be Carlisle Toms. And then we'll be back the week after Carlisle Toms with the return of Wide Track. That's Zach and Ron Tippin. They are the father and son duo of the band Wide Track, and they've got a brand new album out. So tune in for that. We'll be live for that one. And after that,
we've got a pair of guests at the same time. We're getting back into the comic world again with Dan Price and Casey T. Allen. And then we're going to get musical again.
Yeah, Zeta Alfaro, she is an author, but she's also a musician, and she's got music, and she's got books. So kind of that's a double treat there. And after that,
then we're going to have Dave Hooker talking about the Tennessee Volunteers and that 1998 championship season. So we're looking forward to having Dave on the show.
Yes, indeed. So Stephen said, keep your eyes open on that newsletter for all this information. And if you're not subscribed, get subscribed. And we will see you all again next week. And again, thank you, Via, for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Via.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure, Stephen and Bean. Thank you so much.
All right. Now, on the way out, we're going to play two more commercials, and these are for books by your co-hosts. One, short stories by Beam Weeks and short essays by me. So stick around a couple of minutes and check those out, and we'll see everybody next week. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
If you ever find yourself on the strange highway, don't turn around. Don't panic. Just keep going. You never know what you'll find. Could be an autistic young man conjuring magic with his fingers, or one girl's afternoon leading to a lifetime of loss, demon or angel, a winged man revealing his true nature, a mother's recognition bringing closure to her daughter, sudden death of a teen boy stifling burgeoning secrets, black man's guitar transforming one young boy, decades-old accident bringing a desperate confession, supernatural first love healing a broken family. Head on down the strange highway and see more stories unfold. Need a ride? This book will get you there. Catch an e-book or get on the bus with a nice print edition you can hold and keep, perhaps a full-sized trade paperback, or ride in style with your own dust-jacketed hardcover. Fresh ink groups got you covered. You can exit the strange highway. Come back anytime you want. See, now you know the way in. Don't be a stranger.
Fresh Ink Group presents from author Stephen Gies, Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, Observations, Inspiration, Remembrance, and Noteworthies to Share. The simple lives of everyday people in a mundane world prove extraordinary in this collection of 54 personal experience essays by novelist Stephen Gies. The eclectic mix of memoir, commentary, humor, and appreciation covers a wide range of topics, each illustrated by artists and photographers from the Fresh Ink Group. Many of these essays have appeared in other book anthologies such as Chicken Soup, or in popular magazines, newspapers, websites, and the author's site, www.stephengies.com. Some appear in this collection for the first time. Some pieces may resonate in ways that touch you deeply. Others might well remind you of people you've known and loved. Some convey direct messages you might want to pass along, such as appreciation for friendship, birthday wishes, and graduation congratulations. Several explore remembrance, a way to share our search for meaning as we grieve. From cautionary tales to poignant pokes at our uniquely human foibles, Gies catches what many of us miss, then considers how we might all share the most poignant of lessons. Been There, Noted That aims to reveal who we are, examine where we've been, and discover what we dare strive to become. Been There, Noted That, Essays in Tribute to Life, is available worldwide in print editions and ebook editions, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Been There, Noted That is proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.